The NBA opened its regular season on Tuesday night. To mark the occasion, Only a Game is looking back at the best-selling basketball sneakers of all time and the man behind them. Their namesake is in the Basketball Hall of Fame and has remained a household name long after his playing days. No, it's not Michael Jordan. We're talking about Chuck Taylor. Doug Trabu has our story.
Millions of people around the world wear Chuck Taylor's name on their ankles every day. His signature has appeared on the high-top canvas All-Star sneakers since 1932. In Harvard Square in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there is a steady stream of college students, tourists, hipsters, and Chuck Taylors. Morgan Goldstein is sporting a multicolored pair of high tops. She's 23 years old and has owned several pairs of All-Stars.
They're comfortable. They're classic. My parents wore them. My mom thinks it's weird that I'm still wearing them because that's what she wore when she was a kid.
29-year-old Aleem Ahmed is wearing black low tops. Ahmed has no problem explaining why he likes the sneakers, but like most Chuck's owners, he's less certain about Taylor's story.
No, I only know him from the sneakers. Maybe he has a skateboarding background? I don't know.
Abraham Amador wrote a biography of Taylor published in 2006 titled Chuck Taylor All-Star.
It became like Betty Crocker, in a sense. If you were a cook, you knew the name Betty Crocker. There was no such person as Betty Crocker, but there really was such a person as Chuck Taylor. Most Americans didn't know that. People who were buying his shoes by the 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond, they just thought of Chuck Taylor as a brand. His brand grew with the shoe, even as his persona, the real persona, was lost.
Charles Taylor was born in 1901, just 10 years after Dr. James Naismith is credited with inventing the game of basketball. Taylor grew up in Columbus, Indiana, and played for the Columbus High Bulldogs. He graduated in 1919 and eventually landed in Akron, Ohio, where he played for the Firestone Non-Skids, a semi-pro team owned by the tire manufacturer. But in 1922, he accepted a job as a salesman at Converse, and basketball was a critical part of his position.
He loved the game. He loved being a part of it. He put on clinics all over the country, helping kids learn how to play a little bit better.
Joe Dean worked for Converse for nearly 30 years, ending his tenure as a vice president. When Dean was hired in 1959, Taylor was already a giant at the company and in the world of basketball.
He was a lovable guy and fun to be around and a nice guy. And he at one point knew every college basketball coach in the country. And if you wanted to hire a coach, you went through him. He'd recommend somebody.
In the 1920s and 30s, Taylor played on Converse's own team and generated publicity in local newspapers with countless basketball clinics. The self-promotion paid off. The All-Star had debuted in 1917, but 15 years later, Converse added Taylor's name. Amador says customers had already made the switch.
People would order Chuck's shoe or Chuck Taylor's shoe instead of the Converse All-Star. So his signature was added just underneath the five-point star. Brilliant marketing, brilliant branding.
Taylor never asked for a royalty for having his name on the shoe. Air Jordans have earned Michael Jordan far more money than he ever made as a player, but Converse gave Taylor a full expense account and a commission. By the time he retired in the mid-1960s, Taylor had been out on the road selling for more than 40 years. He married and divorced, then married again later in life, but had no children. Dean says Taylor had no regrets.
He went years without having a house or an apartment or anything. He lived out of a hotel 365 days a year. And that was happy for him. That Christmas Day was just another day to him. Converse paid for Christmas, just like any other. They were just glad he didn't ask for a little extra change for his name.
Today, the All-Star's waffle sole and white and black rubber sidewall are instantly recognizable pop culture images, but they were once cutting-edge features that helped Converse maintain control of the basketball sneaker market for the better part of five decades.
I like to say the Chuck Taylor All-Star was born on the basketball courts, raised by rock and roll, and really adopted by street culture and fashion over the years.
Magnus Wedhammer is the vice president of Converse All-Star. In his office in North Andover, Massachusetts, there's a row of new Chucks in a wild assortment of colors and patterns. Wedhammer is originally from Sweden, and his connection to Chuck Taylors began long before his days in the footwear business.
My first pair of Chuck Taylors was actually given to me. I was playing basketball back in Sweden, and my team was sponsored by Converse back in the late 80s and early 90s. So that's a pretty fond memory I have of the Converse brand, and I actually played in the Chuck Taylor early on and then later in the Weapon, which is another iconic model.
Wedhammer says after outliving their basketball usefulness, the sneakers became a statement for customers who are passionate about their Chucks.
Not only passionate, but it's a really personal relationship, and it evokes a lot of emotion. And from young to old, that really have their own, always their own personal story and their personal love affair with the Chuck Taylor All-Star today.
Nike acquired the Converse brand in 2003 and sold 2 million pairs of All-Stars the next year. By 2011, that figure was up to 70 million pairs worldwide. That's more than 191,000 pairs of All-Stars sold every day. The classic black high top and white high top remain the best sellers. That kind of success seemed impossible in 1969 when Converse pulled Taylor out of retirement to visit his old friend and fellow Indiana native, John Wooden. Again, Abraham Amador.
They knew that UCLA and John Wooden was thinking of abandoning the shoe. As the most famous coach in basketball at that time, if John Wooden abandons the Converse Chuck Taylor All-Star, if it's no longer good enough for him, it's not going to be good enough for anybody else.
Despite the visit, Wooden's Bruins, like many other teams, switched to Adidas leather sneakers in the fall of 1969. But in the same year, Taylor also enjoyed a moment of glory. He was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts, as a contributor to the sport. He died before year's end. Taylor's groundwork prepared the All-Stars for their iconic second act as a fashion item, but to Amador, his self-made man story represents something larger.
You know, he's an American character in the sense that we talk about people reinventing themselves. You can't say what he did. He didn't win a Nobel Prize. He's not a great mathematician, you know, he's not Johann Sebastian Bach, but his brilliance was in being an American and just an entrepreneur, and it's great.
It's impossible to know what Taylor would think of the phenomenon his Chucks have become, but any salesman would like to be on a first-name basis with the world. For Only a Game, I'm Doug Tribou.
Do you love your Chucks? Visit Facebook.com/OnlyAGameRadio to see photos of Chuck Taylor. And while you're there, share photos of your Chucks and tell us why you love them. That's Facebook.com/OnlyAGameRadio.
When you buy a pair of Converse, you put them on first. And at the start of the race, y'all, you know who be gone first. Winning a 1,000-yard dash and as you sprint across the finish line, you know the meaning of fast.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Tribou. Our technical director is John Perotti, and we had help this week from Martin Kessler, a.k.a. the ultimate radio utility player. Our intern is Zoe Sobel, and our senior producer is Gary Wallach. Our final word this week comes from Chuck Taylor All-Star wearer Morgan Goldstein, who responds to the question, why?
Because I was a very crazy kid, and I wanted crazy shoes, and I still want crazy shoes.
Kind of wonder why she didn't just go down to the bowling alley. Anyway, I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Support comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at GatesFoundation.org. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at MelvilleTrust.org. And the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.